2023-05 Master Plan Zoning District. Wow.
This is an ordinance to delete Chapter 115, Article 17, the Vacation Retirement Residential Park District, Sections 115-132 through 115-140 in its entirety, and to insert Article 17 Master Plan Zone, Sections 115-132 through 115-140 in its place. Submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the ordinance as it was introduced into Council earlier this year. We also have a copy of the PLUS response from the PLUS meeting that was held back in February of this year, and those comments are dated March 22nd. We also have received one comment letter. This letter was received today, Mr. Chairman, so you may not have seen this yet. We can get copies to you. And then in summary, because this is a somewhat technical ordinance, Mr. Robertson's going to, I'm going to yield to Mr. Robertson so he can present.
Sure, thanks. I thought I'd look around. I know how to clear a room out. I just got Mr. Hutt here. Yikes. That's not a bad thing, though, either. if I could commit Mr. Hutt to leave, I'd be in really good shape. No. So this one, just for the benefit of everybody, this has been something that's been in the works for quite some time. It really goes back to our 2018 comprehensive plan, where we wanted to look at a way that's not currently in our code to let folks that have larger parcels that may be developed have more creativity and also give some flexibility, not only to the developer, but also the county, so we don't get the same, you know, looking subdivisions, for example, all the time. And we also wanted to create a way that we could create larger sort of mixed-use developments that incorporate commercial uses, institutional uses, mixed-use residential, as well as interconnectivity on a fairly large scale with greater density than you could get, you know, currently under the base zone. Package it all into one zoning application, deal with it sort of at a high level when it goes through the public hearing process, and then let the Planning and Zoning Commission deal with sort of more the site plan review stage on the back end without public hearings, and then staff review for the more nitty-gritty details of it. You may have heard me tell you this before. We kind of looked around for a model to use because this is fairly complex, and actually City of Dover has a master plan ordinance. And so we kind of took that, deconstructed that, and then reconstructed it so that it would hopefully work in Sussex County. I think I touched on a few of the items up here on the screen already. The third item, third bullet, it's not intended to replace RPCs, subdivisions, or more typical types of commercial development. That was one of the comments that we received in the correspondence today, you know, that why don't we just, you know, do away with this and keep the RPCs and maybe beef those up. My initial thought to that was, well, why shouldn't we create an additional tool in the toolbox for people to use? Yeah. And the difference between this and an RPC, this is on a bigger scale, as it says in the other bullet, it's 200 acres or more. So, you know, we're not talking about smaller projects. If you have a smaller project, you could still do an RPC or a subdivision or change zone or conditional use. It also does allow you to go to a larger density at a potentially 12 units an acre. There is some governors on that, but again, it also allows more intensive commercial or institutional uses than an RPC would be able to use. Because for you, those of you who don't recall, an RPC, you can do commercial, but it's limited. It's really limited on how much you can do. So again, it's intended to incorporate the following areas as part of a single unified development: the residential areas, what's called neighborhood commercial, what's called professional, medical, and financial office areas, and also civic areas. The idea is you don't have to use all of those, but you have to use some of those. In other words, this isn't supposed to be an opportunity to just do a giant residential subdivision of 12 units an acre. If you're going to give us residential, we need some commercial and you know, either civic areas or professional office areas in there as well. One of the things we looked at is it's large scale enough to promote interconnectivity. That's been an interesting conversation of late. But this is big enough where, if you think of it as being 200 acres between, say, two state-maintained roads, the idea would be that you would install a state-maintained road down the middle to provide interconnectivity between those roads, but also within that development. And then the roadways that sort of spur off from that would be private but dedicated to public use. I did want to touch upon that's not in the site plan, the requirements, just so you know what the threshold requirements are. 200 acres is the minimum. This is on page 7 of the ordinance, line 204. 20% of the land area must be designated to a non-residential use. The density can exceed 12 units an acre. The land area shall have access to an existing or planned arterial or collector road, and those are defined terms. The land area shall be served by existing or planned infrastructure such as sewer and water. The proposed MPZ must be generally consistent with the comprehensive plan. And then one thing we added, because we wanted to put this in here, at least for the conversation of it, is at least if you're going to do this, 20% of all the multifamily dwellings shall be set aside as Sussex County's rental unit dwellings. So that in return for the design flexibility that an applicant gets, the county is getting something in return, which would be more rental units under its affordable rental program. Yeah. There's also open space requirements that are included in it as well. So it's there's definitions. It's not wide open. There's sort of guardrails that you have to stay within, and then you're given design flexibility. So the process is a four-step process, and each level sort of defines what you need to do. The first one is the pre-application meeting, and that's what happens now, I think, with larger developments where the applicant and the engineering staff and maybe the attorney would meet with planning and zoning staff and our county engineer to go over the development, make sure there's not any pitfalls in it, and also suggest some design changes that may be appropriate from either an engineering standpoint or a land use standpoint. And that's when plus review happens as well. The next is the public hearing, just like we'd have now on a rezoning before planning and zoning and county council. And on this one, a little bit different from what you're used to seeing even on an RPC, there's not a super detailed site plan that's provided. Instead, there's a general overall master plan that's submitted. And that sort of just defines, this is what we want this to look like. I think more important is the spatial distribution plan, and there's examples of that coming up, which show where your density is going. Like, so this sort of area is going to be, for example, around the outside of it, the lower density. You know, and as you go towards the middle, maybe 4 units an acre, 6 units an acre, and possibly 12 in the middle, and then also where your commercial uses or neighborhood commercial is going to be, or the civic areas or whatever. Just to give you sort of an idea of, like a bubble drawing, or if you think of like a topographical map, but instead of elevations, it's density, you know, just to give you an idea, the county an idea, what the density will be. And then with that, there's a master manual submitted, which is the design guidelines that a developer, you know, after meeting with the county, gets to come in and say, these are the design guidelines that we're gonna utilize in this master plan. And I'm not gonna go through all those, but there's about 14 different elements that they need to show in that master manual. And that master manual then governs this whole thing from beginning to end. So everything has to be consistent with that going forward. And again, this will be public hearings advertised just like a change of zone with all the newspaper ads and public notices and everything else. And like we do now, that's a hearing before you all with a recommendation to county council. The next step is the administrative review of the plans. That's a little misleading. It's not actually administrative. I mean, it is to some degree, but it's the Planning and Zoning Commission that reviews those, kind of like what we do with site plans now. And so at this stage, there's an implementation plan and an implementation manual that's provided. That's much more detail in the area that they're looking to get approved. It has to be consistent with those master manuals and design plans that were provided during the public hearings. That's going to be vetted by staff. I should say at any point there's a material change, which is defined in here, that would kick it back to the public hearing process. So you can't get the public hearing and then on the back end change it up completely without going back through the public hearings. We want this to stay consistent, sort of general at the top, and then it gets more specific as it goes down. And this is where, you know, it shows the type of housing, the location of the housing, You know, the topography, the streets, roads, sidewalks, and landscaping, the types of thing that you would see on a site plan.
Can I ask you a
question?
Because I don't want to get too far away from this before we come go back to it. In the previous slide where we had the manual and the spatial distribution plan and all those things, are the manual, is the contents of the manual something that is proffered by the applicant and approved by the staff, or is it negotiated with the staff, or is it something that is approved by this body? How does that stuff get to be?
So that is, it's something that's, I would say it's yes to all that. So the idea is that for example, that master manual, that's going to be something that the developer, the applicant, is going to initially prepare, probably in draft form. And it's right. Designed to be narrative and graphic form. It's almost like a zoning code that governs this project, if you kind of think of it that way. This is what we're going to do. These are the rules we're going to follow going forward in this project. So there's going to be conversation, and I don't know if negotiation is the right word, maybe, at the initial level, the pre-application meeting. Then they're going to present it to you, and if there's anything that you don't like or county council doesn't like, you have the opportunity to change that, you know, because this is the kind of thing like an RPC that you can put conditions on, you know, so you can deny it outright
so
if you didn't like it.
So there's like a public hearing at that level? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I was getting at. Okay, so there's a public hearing at that level, and then after that, this when this starts happening.
Yeah, after all that happens.
Okay.
So if you think about it, if you kind of try to pigeonhole on what we do now, if you think of the master manual and the general overall master plan as like a zoning code for this project, right?
Right.
That's approved at the public hearing stage. And then when it comes back for the plan reviews, administrative plan reviews, you're looking to see if those plans and the implementation of that complies with that zoning code that you've established at the public hearing, if that sort of makes sense.
Okay, so if the master plan goes to a public hearing at that previous stage and it is approved, then what will the process be for approving these items? Will they be like a site plan approval?
Yes, like a site plan approval. That's
okay,
right.
So there's one public hearing that for the entire master plan,
right,
notion, concept, whatever.
Right.
And then if that gets approved, from that point forward, I hesitate to use the word administrative, but it's administrative in nature, that it becomes a individual site plan,
right.
more of the way we do a site plan.
Right.
Okay.
That sort of brings up a good point that I sort of skipped over, but sort of the purpose of this. If you think about, if we didn't have the master plan zone, and you want to think of like, I'll just use Bayside as an example, because if they had done that from day one, they might have used this tool if we had it in place.
Yeah.
Or think of it in other ways that we've seen. Right now, you know, if you wanted to do a shopping center with residential and mixed uses and maybe doctor's offices, you'd have to come in and apply for the commercial rezoning. You have a public hearing on that at both council and
people.
And at each opportunity, you know, the public's involved, and then you'd have to come in for the RPC or the subdivision, public hearings, public involvement, separate sort of balkanized site plan with not necessarily any interconnectivity. This sort of take care of that all globally. So it's a one-shot thing. This is what we're doing on this big piece of land. That's the public hearing stage, and then site plans after that.
This is what the public has said to us multiple times, is that we don't have an overview.
Right.
You know, so that certainly will provide that. That will give us a tool to use for that purpose.
Right, and that's kind of the goal, and we've seen that from time to time, and I don't want to name any examples, but you know where, you just see these little smaller parcels all being bitten off for one reason or another, when everybody hopes or knows that it's actually part of a larger plan.
Sure.
This gives a framework to have flexibility and do the larger plan.
Right.
And get interconnectivity and state roads involved and everything else. So,
Speaking of the roads, would the developer initially fund the eventually supported by DLDOT road, or is that required in?
Yeah, no. So it's going to depend, for one thing, on whether it's in a TID or not. So there's, you know, that comes at that early stage, that pre-application meeting. There's going to be coordination with DLDOT and the applicant, because we're not looking, again, for the whole thing to be state roads, but if there's main roads. Frankly, that may be a way to kill two birds with one stone. If DLDOT has, you know, interconnectivity on its horizon through its CTP, then there can be, you know, sort of a nexus between the developer and the development and DLDOT to get that done. So, you know, maybe with TID funds if it's in the TID as well. So there's not one answer to that, but, you know, that would be something that would be taken into account. And then the final step, administratively and truly administratively, is just, we kind of mixed up the terms a little bit, but this is the final site plan, the technical detail site plan. That's a staff review, you know, because you all have already approved generally what the site plan looks like. This is just, you know, the technical details. So, and that would be county engineering and planning and zoning. Keep in mind, throughout this process, it still's got to go through PLUS. It's still got to go through all the agency reviews and everything else. That would come after the public hearings. And just like everything else, it's valid for a period of 5 years to get underway once those site plans are approved. This just gives you an idea of what that spatial distribution plan would look like. Again, this is just really high level to give the commission and the public an idea of, you know, sort of what we're thinking, where, you know, it talks about what the densities are and how many units there are throughout the project, so that, you know, the public and the county can be assured that the design makes sense, you know, because generally good planning is that, you know, you have the lower densities to the outside of the, towards the perimeter of the project, with the higher densities and more intensive uses on the interior, unless it's on, you know, a major arterial roadway or a roadway that could handle the commercial uses, and there's a proposed change I have for that. But that kind of gives you the idea of what we're looking for, so that you know generally what the project's going to look like, and through those manuals we'll have more detail about each of those sort of areas. And this just zooms in, so it's the same thing for the next couple slides. So you can just sort of see what we're talking about. Because one of the things, for example, now it's really tough to do mixed use anywhere in Sussex County without coming in for a conditional use, you know, where that might be residential over retail, for example. This would enable you to do that, you know, as shown. Shows you some of the commercial areas and the type of information.
So can I just ask a question? Mm-hmm. So if we get that in and that is approved, then they need to stick with what?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, they can't. Yeah.
So going back, if you know, if that's what's approved and then they come in and say, well, we're going to flip this whole thing, that would trigger a whole new public hearing.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know. For example, like if they flipped like this and this, you know, that might not. But if it's a material change, you know, it would.
So like moving where the grocery store might be located on the plan, as long as it's still in the commercial area, probably doesn't
matter. Right. Or this one doesn't really show it as a good example. But if there's a spine road that's, you know, dedicated to the state and state maintained, if that was to be moved, you know, that's the kind of thing that would trigger a new public hearing.
Okay, good.
So, and this just, again, just shows sort of that kind of information. This is just a sample one. I don't even think it's based on a real property, right, Jamie? Okay. So you can just get a kind of an idea. So as part of this process, we went through and met, well, we've been talking about this at council for, I think, 2 years now, I feel like, because you can see it's a fairly hefty ordinance. And we've talked about it here at the commission for a while. We've gotten some input even before the public hearing as to, I think it was constructive comments we got from some folks, and we actually had some meetings with people that would implement this, and they had some constructive comments. If it's okay with you, I'd like to read these into the record because they may be things that are recommendation to county council. So the first one is eligibility requirements. There's some confusion as to where this could go. It was referenced in the whereas clause, but we'd like to add it into the ordinance, and that would be to add that it's clearly in the coastal area, the developing area, town center, and commercial area, again, to mirror that whereas clause. At line 192, regarding that spatial distribution plan, we'd like to clarify that in addition to higher densities, the commercial areas or intensive uses should be centrally located and or along main roadways consistent with higher density residential uses. There's a question about whether it had to be in the middle or if you're on, you know, say Route 1, it would make sense to have commercial on Route 1. We didn't want to limit it to where you could put it. Line 209 is eligibility requirements. Consider changing the reference from existing or planned arterial or collector roads, which actually that was a term that was used, but it's not one that's defined in the code, to use major arterial roadways and collector streets, which are actually defined in Chapter 99. Line 223 was the design and development principles and standards, and there was a suggestion to consider adding a new number 11, stating that all collector roads, or the similar term, within the MPZ must be constructed to DLDOT standards and state maintained, or simply move and copy this requirement from elsewhere at line 317 to 322, so that all other, and state that all other public roads within the MPZ are dedicated to public use and must remain open and accessible to the public at all times. Again, this is large enough with enough different types of uses, including people that would be coming from outside into the commercial or civic or professional uses. But we want to make sure that they're all dedicated to public use. There's a requirement in there, was a planning requirement originally that said that all open space shall be located to the fronts of buildings. After meeting with different people and talking over with staff, we said, well, that should be a goal, not a requirement. So we changed that one from shall to should. Service alleys, line 279 to 283. After some talk, there was deleting the reference to those service alleys, the requirement for those, or to require it only in the case of neighborhood commercial areas, professional office, medical or financial areas, or the civic areas. In other words, don't force people to have the service alleys around residential. You could use them if you wanted to. The thought was, if you had service alleys, then the trash and everything else would be in the back. But in talking with different folks would have to design this, that would be a good opportunity, but it would be tough if it's a requirement, given the geometry of things, et cetera. Line 304, and this actually repeats throughout 352 and 386, considering allowing these areas to have frontage on existing DLDOT rights of way instead of just an internal Main Street. This is the one, like if you're on Route 1, you ought to be able to do these more intensive uses on Route 1 and not just the internal street. Line 304 and then also 358 and 392, this is one, it had to do with the parking design, and there's a suggestion in there that it be more flexible and that it be designed so that off-street parking is screened from rights-of-ways and non-commercial uses so that the buildings and landscape areas are more visible than large off-street parking lots. There was previously a requirement that they just not be visible at all or not located in the fronts of buildings. And again, for geometrical reasons and other planning reasons, that may not always be the best. But try to design them so they're at least screened. Again, this is another one, line 317, in terms of changing shall to should about the location of commercial areas and how they're oriented to main streets. And then line 330, 364, and 398. This was kind of like the alleys. Consider deleting this item that service drives shall be designed and used for loading and trash collection, or change it to something like whenever possible, service drives shall be designated or designed and utilized for loading and trash collection. Don't worry, there's only a few more of these. line 336 to 339, there was a prohibition against drive-through uses in the neighborhood commercial area. That started in there, and I will tell you the reason it started is because we wanted these locations to be more walkable. You know, we wanted to get people to park their cars and try to walk around. I think that still should be a goal, but we also heard that, you know, that gets a little more dicey when you think about it in terms of pharmacies. You know, if there's going to be a pharmacy that's a neighborhood pharmacy, they always want drive-throughs, or banks. Not to mention Starbucks. So, but anyway, that was one that it wasn't one that we were going to fall on our sword on, you know, but there was good reasons for taking that out also. And the master manual at line 448, It referred to a master transportation plan approved by DLDOT, which is actually in Dover's model. We recognize that turns out isn't an item recognized by DLDOT, so we just suggested replace it with traffic impact study for the MPC. The MPZ is approved by DLDOT. Line 466 to 471, again, there was a requirement in the master manual that there be reference to architectural details. Again, that was in the initial draft for discussion purposes. There was conversation about taking that out. For one thing, Sussex County doesn't really dictate architectural styles. The other thing is this is a large enough project that would last over such a long period of time that architectural tastes and styles might change from the time it comes through a public hearing to the time it's built. So that's one to delete. Same thing with line 489 to 491. There was, and this was a Dover one, but design of lighting fixtures and globes, street lighting, that sort of thing, and signage and stuff. That's something that is not so specific that we need to consider at a county level. And then the last item, you'll be glad to hear, is that we just add confirmation that any MPZ will be subject to the resource buffer requirements. We had started drafting this prior to the resource buffer stuff being drafted, and it sort of went in parallel for a while, so we just want to make sure it's clear that that's in there. And that's really the extent of the presentation. I know you've got a fairly lengthy ordinance that you might review. Just to give you an idea, this was one that was done. This is Eden Hill up in Dover, and they call it their traditional neighborhood design residential district, but it includes a large professional office building, a commercial district for medical and retail sections, and also residential. It had the general overall master plan and their what they called a pattern book. And it went through, and the economy hit it a little bit, but this gives you an idea of what their manual looked like. So it sort of spells out how they're going to do it, what they're going to do, what the buildings are going to look like. But it is moving along quite well. This is sort of just an overhead view. You can see that there's that doctor's office in here. There's internal streets that connect with traffic circles to two roads. There's residential over here. All of this ultimately is going to be developed. And I think this is actually a little bit outdated at this stage. This further
going on.
That concludes it.
What was the name of that?
I'm sorry. It's Eden Hill.
Eden Hill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in case.
It's a really nice place.
Yeah. It is pretty nice. And again, it was an opportunity for Dover to look at all these different things versus doing a zoning and site plan for just a medical building and a zoning and site plan for townhouses and a zoning and site plan for other types of retail types of uses. So we hope it's a tool that the development community will use when appropriate. It's not something that's going to be used all the time. We don't expect it to. It's something that I think there probably are limited circumstances where it could be used based on whether there's infrastructure around, the size of the parcel still. But I think there's enough large areas of your land that can be consolidated or whatever to make this work and end up with a better product for Sussex County and its residents now and in the future if it's done right. So I know there was a letter that Mr. Whitehouse submitted from Pinoni. They had some comments on it. I suppose Mr. Hutt's going to have some comments since he's sat through this. Take some time to consider it. Mr. Whitehouse, you've been through this whole process. I don't know if you have anything you want to add.
It's a good summary. Throughout the whole process, we've had technical input from the state. The plus comments are in as well. The state was very supportive of the objective,
that.
And they had some helpful comments too. So this has been through plus too.
Right. We hope that eventually you'll act favorably upon it so we can get it up to council, and hopefully they will.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. I may have missed this because I stepped out for a minute, but are we taking advantage of the opportunity to insert requirements around protecting some forested space as part of these developments? Is there, is there room for that in these requirements?
Yeah, so it states in here, and it's something you could consider bumping up. If you look at, I don't expect you to read it now, but if you want to jot down line 235, it's on page 7. It talks about design principles, and I wasn't going to read you the whole ordinance.
No,
please. Be here until tomorrow, but
talk about open space.
Yeah, and it talks about the design for the entire zone. I'm going to read this part because I think it answers Scott's question. The design for the entire zone shall follow an environmentally sustainable approach to the development. To accomplish this, the design shall take advantage of natural drainage patterns on the site and minimize unnecessary earth-moving erosion, tree clearance, and other disruption of the natural environment. Existing vegetation and habitat shall be preserved wherever possible. Wherever extensive natural tree cover and vegetation do not exist or cannot be preserved on the site, landscaping shall be undertaken in order to enhance the appearance of the development, et cetera. So a couple thoughts on that, it occurs to me. One is that's the directives of this. The second thing is you all have the opportunity to put conditions on it or require changes to the site plan. The third thing is that because this goes up to 12 units an acre, there's some give and take on that. You know, like, so if you have a subdivision and you have 2 units an acre and that's what you're locked into, it becomes much more difficult without incentives to do tree preservation if you have a wooded lot. Here, if there's existing areas that are treed, you can work around those and still get a fairly high density, you know, elsewhere on the project, or more intensive uses, you know, through commercial or whatever you want to do. So I kind of think this actually fosters that more than any other, maybe an RPC, but I think this fosters that more than any other tool we have right now. The other thing with the RPCs is, you know, again, for your benefit and on the whole commission, with that, you're still stuck with the base zoning. You get design flexibility, but if it's MR, you're still stuck with 4 units an acre. I shouldn't say stuck. You're limited to 4 units an acre, you know. Here, you get up to 12, but you've got to design it to take that into account. We're not expecting it to be 12 units an acre across 200 acres, you know, but, and that's what the design principles in here are intended to limit. But we're also, you know, you're not beholden to the 4 units an acre that you would be in an RPC that's an MR RPC. That was a long answer to your short question.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts.
Yeah.
You covered it very well.
Yeah. Okay, anything else for Vince?
And I don't expect a motion on this tonight.
Well, we're going to see if there's any interest in from the public to speak, and then we'll.
And I would say, too, I know Mr. Hutt's going to speak. It might be one of those circumstances where, you know, this is a 17-page, 592-line ordinance. You know, it might be something. I don't know, Mr. Whitehouse, when's it on for county council? November. So we have some time. Well, he's looking that up. It might be such a thing.
October 17th.
All right. I mean, you could leave the record open for a couple weeks anyway for anybody to submit written comments on it, since now it's actually, you know, sort of seen the light of day and had a hearing. Just a suggestion, anyway.
Great idea.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone here with an interest in this ordinance? I believe there is.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is David Hutt, attorney with Morris James. I guess I wanted to sort of begin this afternoon with, and Mr. Robertson mentioned it a number of times, but what this ordinance does, and it's similar to, in some respects, an RPC, as he indicated, and in other municipalities, they call it LPDs and other types of overlays. But what you're essentially doing for whatever that parcel of land is creating a unique zoning district for that land itself. And so whether it's that master manual or that spatial distribution plan, that becomes the zoning code, as it were, for that parcel of land. And I think that's an important distinction, and I'm going to wax philosophical for a moment before I get into the weeds, but The challenge with an ordinance like this, I think, is to not be too specific. The county has seen this problem, for instance, with the C4 ordinance. The C4 ordinance, which I think people thought was going to be a commercial RPC ordinance that many people could take advantage of, has not proven to be successful, and part of that's because of the requirements that were found in it. I know it's already been amended, I believe, once to change the ratio of commercial and residential to try to get that right. And I say that at the outset to say that, and it was good to see, and I was writing furiously as the slides were going across the screen, all the amendments, because the use of the word shall in here was very discouraging to see, because you want to allow, and I'm not a land use designer, as you know, and I'm not an engineer, but you want to allow those individuals a great deal of flexibility to create something that has a there. You want to allow people to, for instance, one of the things that concerns me is the areas that you have to have, whether it's the neighborhood commercial area, the professional office, medical and financial area, or the civic area. Certainly, those are all things you don't want just a large residential community, as Mr. Robertson pointed out. But there's a range there. You can't be below 20% and you can't be above 50%. And in certain circumstances, it might be, I could foresee certain circumstances along certain major arterials where it might be appropriate to have a greater degree of that commercial civic mix versus the residential mix. And so to pigeonhole it between 20 and 50 seems to me that you're starting to, and I know that Mr. Roberts referred to it as guardrails, and certainly you don't want it to be the Pirate Code, which is, you know, guidelines according to the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. So it has to be more than that, but it could be too much. And my concern is that this is too much and is a tool that won't be able to use. And every person in here, including the two newest members, has heard me refer to the tools in the toolbox. And certainly I'd love to have another tool to have clients be able to use. And that's where my comments were focused on. Again, it was great to see a number of times where the word shall was removed. I question whether that range of 20 to 50% is the right range. And I would suggest, and I can't tell you that I've done some research or study or can cite to some paper that says that this would be the right ratio. You'd have to have some of all of those things, and you want to have a minimum so nobody goes, you know, there's not a token commercial store on the corner of somewhere and nothing else. But maybe just a minimum, and that you have to have a minimum of, say, 25% residential and or 20% of all these other items, so that it allows that great deal of flexibility across all the various uses. Another example of this is, if I read it correctly, it looks like the civic area has a maximum of 10%, I believe, in this ordinance. And frankly, if somebody wanted to build something centered around a large civic area, I would think the county would welcome that. Because, think of something like, and this goes back to Mr. Robertson's point about basically, I would think of the Freeman stage or something like that. If somebody wanted to have a complex like that, you wouldn't want them to not qualify for this because of that 10% limitation. And that's just, again, there are very limited opportunities in the Sussex County Zoning Code for a mixture of uses, of residential and commercial uses. And in fact, under the current zoning code, it's pretty much C4 unless you're going to do a conditional use process. And so that's sort of one of the overarching concerns that exists. Specifically, I want to go into a couple specific comments. Line 198, which is on page 6 and is within the definition of spatial distribution plan. And this may have been on the slide and I may have missed it, Mr. Robertson. If so, I apologize. But in subsection A, where it says lower density development radiating away from higher density development, it says at the interior of the MPZ. And I would suggest, if that wasn't in part of your changes already, that you strike the at the interior of the MPZ. As was noted, and as that slide that's on the screen shows, the heaviest is not at the interior of this. And again, it would just depend on the site whether or not that occurred. And I think your change added language to B, but I don't think it changed anything in A. And I think that would make A and B consistent if that were done in that fashion. The Mr. Robertson mentioned adding a provision in the eligibility requirements that it has to be in one of the four growth areas that he identified. I would argue that it should be expanded, as there are areas in Sussex County that are situated along major arterials that have water and sewer available, which may not be presently included in a growth area. And the what I would suggest, rather than, I think what both the Office of State Planning Coordination, I think the Pannoni letter commented on this, is that perhaps the whereas clause at the beginning be modified in lines 19 through 22. And you can, I think the county could say it's certainly appropriate in those four growth areas, but that given if you have the right area of land with the right other circumstances, that it is, it could be appropriate. And bear in mind that I think the protection that this body has and county council has is this what's being proposed here is a change of zone. And so as you know, that's where you have the most discretion. This is not a subdivision, as Mr. Robertson alluded to, where in order for people to get to a certain density, they may have to take down trees to accomplish that. And this is a zoning classification, and if you don't like the master manual, you don't like the spatial distribution plan, you recommend to county council, no. And so I think that's the protection that this body has, and ultimately county council has, on the proper use of this ordinance.
Just on that point, just for the benefit of the commission, we had talked about that, and the recommendations I had, those are sort of staff recommendations. What Mr. Hutt's talking about is more of a policy one, and that's one for you to consider. And I'll point out that I tend to agree with him. You know, again, these are supposed to be large in scope, you know. I mean, not, you know, 200 acres is a fairly good size, but anticipate they'd be even larger than that. So, you know, they may be large enough that they are self-contained, you know, where they would be on a scale that would create their own infrastructure, water and sewer, you know, with commercial or whatever, you know, so.
And if you think of the western side of the county, you are going to see, you know, I'm thinking of large farms. You've got a 500 or 600 acre farm where someone might want to master plan something. It might not be in a town center, but it might be close enough that utilities would make sense because of its size, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see instances where it could be useful in an AR1 zone, you know, for an example. And I wouldn't want it to not, to patently not be available, but perhaps, you know, it's going to be a harder row because of that, you know.
In other words, that the opportunity's there, at least, you know, to see if it works. Yeah.
I tend on the western side to see that more useful, self-contained. I mean, we see what, like Heritage Shores, self-contained golf course. They got their own shops. They've got everything. And that was built on, what, 400 acres, 500
acres? Yeah, and they had to be. They were annexed into Bridgeville, so they became part of the town of Bridgeville, which I get is what the state is wanting folks to do. Right. They want them to be where the services are, and I understand that. The situation in western Sussex a lot of times is that's not where the land is. You know, the land is maybe a little bit more removed.
But Heritage Shores, you know, that's actually probably a fairly good example of this if you think of probably a little more commercial, but that would be one if it was in the county.
That would have been a good candidate.
Candidate for this, yeah.
I think you'd probably see them more self-sustaining if if water and sewer wasn't such the key at that point. Mm-hmm. I mean, they did put their own towers up and everything else. Right. So
that's going to be the water and sewer is going to be the thing.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it just is. Yep. And that's going to become, I mean, that'll become a part and parcel of this type of ordinance, too. I mean, how are you going to deal with that? And to your point, you know, if somebody has enough, it's big enough, and they have to build their own plant, or they have to augment the county's plant or somebody else's plant, those are all things that can be done, you know.
Yeah, and it may not be feasible, but it just, I mean, it's one of those things where you wouldn't want to shut the door on it.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying is that, yeah, we want there to be an opportunity, but.
And this, I will tell you that the state, I think Mr. Hutt alluded to this, that they would not be in favor of it because they're based on their strategies for state spending level four stuff. But, I mean, to me, well, I probably shouldn't say too much more, but if it's large enough, you know, I mean, it can sustain the improvements that the state's going to require.
And that's it, exactly. We're not saying that it's going to go in an area and remain unimproved.
Yeah.
It's going, it all comes down to being able to afford to do the things that are necessary to make it acceptable. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't want to just rule it out on a zoning basis, yeah. You know, from in the beginning. I would like it to at least be subject to that study, you know.
Mr. Hutton, the example of you're talking about, you know, the higher density commercial being on the perimeter potentially, that would facilitate things like, I'm just going to say the name of a retailer like Trader Joe's or Costco potentially being in one of these communities, serving that community but also serving a broader right. public, and you would want that to be on a major route, not buried inside of a subdivision.
Right. If I lived in that community, I wouldn't want everybody going to Costco driving by my house to get
exactly.
there.
Yeah, exactly. You want it to be on the perimeter. Sure. Yeah. You want it to be on the perimeter. Yeah.
Right. And to the point about, I mean, I had Western Sussex in mind with some of those comments because, frankly, there's four growth areas that are mentioned and one of those doesn't exist in Western. The coastal area
exactly.
obviously doesn't exist
exactly.
in Western
nothing,
Sussex.
Yeah.
And so, again, to me, that just means that the recitals are changed as compared to adding a new eligibility requirement. The next one that I wanted to address in the eligibility requirements, which are on page 7, lines 221 and 222. And, this is an important topic, and I, by no means are any of my comments meant to deter or detract from the importance of this topic. But it says at least 20% of all multifamily dwellings shall be set aside as Sussex County Rental Program units governed by Chapter 72. I would say that this goes back to those ratios and requirements. And I know that the county has now seen an application, at least one, I think, for the under the new SCRP rental ordinance. I know there's one that exists, but I think you've seen one that just went through the site plan review process. But that ordinance has been out there for a very long time, and it does not have a track record that would indicate that this is something that's feasible. And so, but I certainly recognize the importance of housing, and I would suggest that part of that zoning district say that rather than what's there at lines 221 and 222, that there has to be an affordable housing component. And whether that's money per unit that's sold, per square foot, there's a lot of ways to approach that problem that might not lock people into 20% of all multifamily dwellings being part of the Sussex County Rental Program. And I hope the revisions to the Sussex County Rental Program work. But if they don't, if it turns out that there's not more applications that come in on the Sussex County Rental Program, then nobody will be able to use this tool because they don't want to move forward in that direction. But again, I think there can be language that, and I don't, you know, but because this would be a change of zone, it would be up to your discretion as to whether or not that project had addressed affordable housing at the right level. And if you didn't think it did, you recommend no, and County Council rejects denies the change of zone application. But again, to tie something to a program that I think everybody hopes with the changes is successful, but to date has had, I believe, limited success, is a tough thing to do for a new ordinance that's coming into enactment.
Question about that, Mr. Hutt. So I know some affordable housing that does come on the market from time to time is purchased by investors or, you know, people like myself who might want to own a rental property, so I'm arguing against myself here. You know, do you think that there's room in the case of modifying this so that some of the housing could be affordable housing to somehow limit the use of that housing for short-term rentals, for example. You think that would be an acceptable
I don't know that you, position? I don't, historically, I don't think the county has gotten into length of term of leasing.
Sure.
So I think that would be a slippery
difficult
slope.
Difficult to enforce too, I agree.
But I do think, again, it concerns me, again, almost any time I saw a specific number in here, it really made me do a double take. Is that a number that I think developers who are doing large-scale projects can work with? This one stood out to me as a number that, you know, the current Sussex County rental program, you know, it's just underway, it's fairly recently enacted, but can a developer say, well, I can do 20% of that rental program? Again, there might be other more creative ways, and if this is a code requirement, this is an base eligibility requirement, if you haven't met that 20% threshold, I believe Mr. Whitehouse and Mr. Robertson are going to show you the door when you try to apply.
And generally, like ownership, even for lower income housing, is better, tends to be better for the communities that it's in. But interesting.
And I certainly think with how this ordinance is laid out, and even on the screen there would probably be good opportunities for other there are government credit sponsored programs that come in. I know of several in Sussex County, and they might like a 5-acre block because they know that there are a certain amount of credits and tax benefits and all that for that. And there's tax credit builders out there, and you know, a couple of those blocks could be oriented to them, but that wouldn't help meet this requirement of 20%. And again, that's the concern that exists for that. I think the only other, again, I'm gonna have to go back and look at what Mr. Robertson's, all his changes that he had on the screen were. The only thing I wanted to.
And I'll share the PowerPoint with you so you have it as well.
The only other comment that I had wanted to make was with respect to drive-throughs. On that example, I would almost guarantee somebody would want to drive through. And I know that's just an example, and you know, but it eliminating drive-throughs, you know, I understand walkability, and certainly that's why there's all those open spaces and green spaces. And I know that I think Mr. Robertson and Mr. Whitehouse have heard me or somebody else say this before, but a parent with a sick child goes to a pharmacy, they want to go to a drive-through. They don't want to go inside the store.
Absolutely. I think everybody gets that. I think that's a change that definitely needs to be made. Yeah.
But again, other than that, it's a sort of a, I guess, like I said at the beginning, it's almost a philosophical discussion about how specific do you get where you've narrowed the scope down too much that it's not a tool that would only ever work on one piece of property that somebody's going to have to try to uncover that actually meets all those eligibility requirements and all that. And so and I understand there's a fear of not regulating it enough that, you know, it's going to be whatever. And I still think that's a lesser fear because it's a change of zone process, and it affords you all the greatest amount of flexibility. And it's actually the one change of zone, I guess an RPC could be similar, but it's a change of zone where you all get to put conditions on it. That's something you don't typically get to do.
Right.
Typically, a change of zone is up or down. Somebody comes in and says, I want my AR1 to be MR. You say yes or no. And this is, well, your master manual says this, but we're going to make it so it's this. And so it's a change of zone that has, that can have conditions sort of built in. And again, that, please do not take any of my comments as being against this. The more tools, the better. But I just am hopeful that the tool can be as useful as possible for all parts of Sussex County.
And I would just add, Mr. Hutt brings up a good point with his conclusion, too. It's really an opportunity for the commission to get engaged in that process, too, because, you know, you all can be proactive in the conversation with, you know, how this thing's going to look at the end, you know, through conditions of approval or changes to the spatial distribution plan or changes to that master manual. So, you know,
I'm just thinking about how much Ms. Zoe Stevenson would have enjoyed that process. She left too soon.
I will try to make her proud.
There you go.
That's the best I can do.
All
right.
That's
thank
all
you.
I had, Mr. Whitley.
All right. Whitley. Thank you.
I'll email you the PowerPoint. our point, so you have it.
Okay, it doesn't appear that there's anyone else who wants to speak, so commissioners, if you have any further points you'd like to discuss now, that's fine, or we can... Mr. Robertson did mention that we might wish to leave the record open for a little bit in case the public wants to chime in as a result of what was said here today.
Do we need a motion for that?
We do.
I'd like to move that we keep the record open pertaining to the ordinance change that's proposed.
And you're also going to want to defer action.
Yeah, well,
and defer action.
You're going to want to, so if we're going to make the motion, council's on when, October 17th? 17th. All right, and when's our P&Z before that?
20.
Okay.
And then another one.
But there's one at the beginning of October still, too.
Well, yeah, we got two meetings before they meet, right? Yeah.
I would say it'd be nice to have the comments in before the next meeting, you know, just because we're somewhat condensed. So maybe hold the record open for, I don't know, what, 10 business days?
10.
10 business days for any written comments on the ordinance.
So moved. Is that the motion?
Yeah, that works.
Okay, it's moved and seconded to defer action on ordinance. We're just going to go ahead and do this now. The ordinance 2305, master plan zoning district, leaving the record open for 10 business days to receive comments from the public. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Okay, our next public hearing is ordinance number 20.